It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegebright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show,
I want you to make sure of four things. Either, I don't want any jail. I don't care what you do. You've got to hold on to my driver's license or I'll lose my job. Or, Margaret, please save my job first and foremost. Or, Margaret, just make sure I don't get thrown out of school. Those four areas, depending upon who they are and where they are and what kind of crime it is that they're alleged to have done, those are the four things that they're really looking for. So no matter what, save those particular things. And so that when I announce the collateral consequence that may come from taking a plea agreement, they'll say, you know what, I don't care.
Criminal defense lawyer Margaret Nelson reveals the troubling consequences of a juvenile court adjudication that can follow a youth well into adulthood. And what's a reasonable length of time to wait for a landlord to make repairs before taking the matter to court is discussed during this week's question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 71, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. Medicare's annual open enrollment occurs every year from November 15 through December 31. It's the one time every year when all people with Medicare can review their prescription drug and health plan options and any changes in their current coverage to make sure they have the coverage that best meets their needs. Those who don't have prescription drug coverage also can enroll in a Part D plan during open enrollment. There are a wide range of tools and resources available to help beneficiaries and their caregivers make smart choices about Medicare prescription drug and health coverage. You can call Medicare at 1-800-MEDICARE to find out more about the plan options available. You can visit www.medicare.gov to find a wide range of interactive tools to help you review the different plans. Or you can meet one-on-one with a trained expert for assistance by calling 1-800-MEDICARE or visiting www.medicare.gov to find a local Medicare specialist. But if you want to enroll or change, you must act no later than December 31. In other news, the so-called need for predatory lending isn't nearly as big when you consider most of the business is repeat business. A 2008 report from the Virginia State Corporation Commission's Bureau of Financial Institutions reveals that 92% of Virginia payday loan borrowers are repeat borrowers. This finding is similar to a study recently released by the Center for Responsible Lending, which revealed that a sizable majority of payday lending volume is generated by payday debt itself. In other words, borrowers need to open a new loan shortly after repaying a previous loan because repayment leaves them with inadequate funds for other needs. According to the Center for Responsible Lending, the short-term due date of payday loans generates need for repeat payday loans and accounts for 76% of total volume. repeat borrowing of what is marketed as a short-term loan of a few hundred dollars has long been documented, but this report verifies for the first time how quickly most payday lending customers must turn around and reborrow after paying off their previous loan. The full report is available at www.responsiblelending.org. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is summons. A summons is a court document notifying a defendant that a lawsuit has been instituted against him or her and that he or she is required to answer to it at a time and place named. Papers from the General District Court will tell you the date, time, and place of your court hearing. This hearing may be your only chance to dispute or oppose the claim against you. Papers from the Circuit Court will not give you a date, time, or place of your court hearing. Instead, the papers say you have 21 days after getting them to file a written answer with the circuit court. The answer must reply to each numbered paragraph of the complaint and must admit or deny each numbered paragraph. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and summons is this week's legal term of the week.
It's time for this week's question and answer. We're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Tell us your name and where you're from.
Keith, Richmond, Virginia.
Welcome to the show. Keith, what's on your mind today?
How long does a landlord have to take before making repairs on a complaint?
Well, that's an excellent question, Keith, and the answer really depends on the nature of the complaint. First of all, people who want their landlords to make repairs have to remember three things. First, you have to be current in your rent and stay current. Secondly, you have to give written notice to the landlord or make sure that somebody like the building inspector has given written notice on your behalf to the landlord. And then third, you have to wait a reasonable period of time for the landlord to make the repair. Now that goes to the question that you asked, what is a reasonable period of time? And that really depends on the nature of the problem. If it's an ordinary problem, then probably 21 to 30 days is reasonable. But if it's something that is a lot more urgent or even life or safety or health threatening, such as no heat in the winter, no air conditioning if the landlord is supposed to supply air conditioning in the summer, or an electrical malfunction or something of that nature, it could be more like a few days or possibly even a day or two. What is the nature of the problem that you have?
I have a bad leak coming up through my bathroom floor.
And about how much water is coming up? Is this something that you would measure in, ounces or gallons, or just how bad is the leak?
It soaks the rug that I have in there. I have to pull it up every couple of days, and the floor is starting to sag right around the toilet.
Well, that sounds like something that's more time than just a few days, but probably less time than a few weeks. So I think I would definitely give written notice. I would give the landlord possibly 10 to 14 days to make the repair. That seems more than reasonable under the circumstances. And then the most important thing to remember is that if you do those three things, you're current in rent and you stay current, you give written notice, and you give a reasonable period of time and wait that time, if the repairs still are not made, then you can take your next month's rent down to the General District Court and file what's called a tenant's assertion or a rent escrow case, and you pay that next month's rent into court. Now, it's right now December 23rd, so you've got like 8 days to the end of the month, another 5 after the end of the month to pay your rent. So if you gave written notice right today, you could probably pay your January's rent into court and file that tenant assertion if the landlord doesn't make the repairs in a timely manner. We're here with Margaret Nelson. She's a private attorney in Lynchburg, Virginia, the chair of the Virginia State Bar's Access to Justice Committee that affects access to criminal and civil courts in Virginia. She's recently concluded a 6-year term as a board member of the Virginia Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. She is a former prosecutor, a former public defender, and now a private defense attorney in Lynchburg, Virginia. Welcome to the show, Margaret.
Thank you, Marty. Thank you for having me here.
About a year ago, you wrote an article for the Virginia Lawyer called Marked for Life, Long-Term Effects of Juvenile Adjudications, in which you spoke about what we call the collateral consequences of a juvenile criminal case. What are collateral consequences?
Collateral consequence is an unintended result in that it does not evolve directly from the punishment in the case, but something that can either come later or it can come immediately, but it is a result that will affect the person who has sustained a finding of sufficiency of guilt.
Now, in your article, you said, and I quote, "For most of the 100-year history of the juvenile or family court in the U.S., and until 1995 in Virginia, a juvenile adjudication was not deemed to be the equivalent of a conviction of a crime and did not carry forth the stigma or consequences of a criminal conviction into the rest of the youth's life," end of quote. Apparently, that's no longer the case. Can you tell us why?
I certainly can. Part of what that 100-year history took into account was that children had not developed either in their emotions or in their physical development or their impulse control so that whatever they did as a juvenile, some kind of delinquent act, was not seen as something that should follow them for the rest of their lives. So therefore, it was seen as something that could be handled, dealt with, but it wasn't a conviction that would follow them and have a collateral consequence. It was buried in the graveyard of youthful indiscretion. And many of us can see in even current circumstances that children are not held to be capable of having or making adult decisions. The courts for the 100-year history did take that into account. And I'll give you an example. Even now, kids can't vote. Kids don't have driver's licenses without adults. Their parents must sign off. Children under the age of 18, they don't get married unless their parents sign off. You can't get a tattoo, even now in Virginia, unless you're 18. You can't watch an R-rated movie unless parents give their consent. And you can't enter into a legal contract. However, in 1995 and in 1996, the laws in Virginia changed to hold juveniles accountable to a higher level, and that's where the collaterals begin. And what had happened is in 1995, the General Assembly adopted what's called sentencing guidelines that included the juveniles' adjudications as a part of the scoring for prior crimes when an adult gets sentenced. That juvenile record now follows them. That's the first dimension. And then in 1996, the same legislature then reformed the transfer system, which is the transfer of the kids from the juvenile court who have committed crimes that are deemed as being so serious that those kids can now be, or can, starting at that time, be found guilty as an adult. And so that's the transfer system that began to include the juvenile delinquency adjudications. and therefore it begins to enhance the sentences as well as counting.
Well, now, everybody probably thinks that the juvenile court records, whether you're over 14 or under 14, are basically private, sealed, confidential, cannot be gotten into for any reason except in extraordinary circumstances. Apparently, from what you're telling us, that is no longer the case.
That is no longer the case for this situation of what I'm talking about with what happened in 1995. Those records can now be used in every case there where an adult is being found guilty and their sentencing report is being prepared. It is a factor to be considered that enhances punishment. So that youthful indiscretion that was buried before is now going to be available to enhance the sentence. And in some cases, to actually increase, because in some statutes, they can actually be used to enhance the actual sentencing result.
Now, in your article, you gave some examples of other types of collateral consequences in addition to the enhanced sentencing that can follow a youth who's adjudicated to have done something wrong well into adulthood. Can you give us an example or two of that?
Certainly. There are about 10 different things which are considered collateral consequences. One is the limitation on housing, that when a person has committed certain drug crimes, particularly even as a juvenile or as an adult, that person is not able to be in public housing. And that means that then the family that either houses the person, they must leave or they must throw that person out. And when you're dealing with a juvenile, if that's the person that is a juvenile who has committed that crime, then it puts the parents in a situation of either they must leave or they must turn out the child and make the child homeless or have to turn them back on into the care of either social service or something else. So that's housing. Employment, there are restrictions on employment. If a person is convicted of certain types of crimes, they either cannot have licensing for it or they can't have a particular health care would be one of them. If a person has a crime of violence, I mean, that can even be a simple assault, then a health care area is very restrictive. Then there's the area of the inability to adopt or foster care a child, that you cannot have that if you have certain convictions. You're not able to vote, of course, with a felony conviction in Virginia. The ability to carry or possess a firearm, very restrictive statutes that include children in that. The ability to join the military or to join the police department because of certain crimes. Educational loans can be denied because of certain convictions. And of course, then there's the deportation situation that will occur if certain crimes have been seen to have been committed. Also, entry into rehabilitation programs can be denied for children as well as for adults if they have a record in certain areas. So there are quite a few things where people would like to see people have the benefit of programs that would help them, help lift them up out of their own economic situation. People who may want to, but they can't because of these particular collateral effects.
Well, now, given all these particular collateral effects that you've described, why would a lawyer who is representing a juvenile who is in, you know, juvenile court, juvenile and domestic relations court, not be aware of these consequences and not advise the family of those consequences and take those into account when representing the juvenile in court?
It's not that we're not aware of them. It is that the client really comes down to saying, Margaret, I want you to make sure of four things. Either, I don't want any jail. I don't care what you do. You've got to hold on to my driver's license or I'll lose my job. Or, Margaret, please save my job first and foremost. Or, Margaret, just make sure I don't get thrown out of school. Those four areas, depending upon who they are and where they are and what kind of crime it is that they're alleged to have done, those are the four things that they're really looking for. So no matter what, save those particular things. And so that when I announce the collateral consequence that may come from taking a plea agreement, they'll say, you know what? I don't care. I'll give you an example of a schoolhouse fight. Let's use that as the example. A schoolhouse fight where there's a young man, let's call him Tiny Tim. Tiny Tim, this little fella, was on the playground, and this big old bully, let's call him Billy Bully, he comes up and he picks a fight with Tiny Tim, and he throws him around, and Tiny Tim is so small he can't take care of himself. Sam Samaritan, one of Tiny's friends, comes up and he intervenes, and the fight stops. And then, lo and behold, Billy Bully tries to jump on Tim again, and Sam Samaritan intervenes, throws Billy to the ground, and breaks his arm, and Billy gets cut. Well, there's a zero tolerance policy. We all seem to know that in the school system. Zero tolerance for fighting. Billy gets charged. He gets thrown out. And Sam Samaritan gets charged. He gets charged with malicious wounding because it's a broken arm and broken skin. Well, when this well-meaning tax attorney comes in to help handle the case because the parents said, well, it's all right. It's just juvenile court. It doesn't have much effect. It doesn't matter. I remember when I was a child and I got into trouble. You know, you can handle it. Well, the well-meaning tax attorney talks to the prosecutor, and the prosecutor offers him unlawful wounding. It's still a felony, and unfortunately, it is still a felony, and it brings all the collateral consequences. And what will happen is they want to avoid the media, they want to avoid the trial, they want to avoid problems, and they got a promise that he could stay in school. And so they took the felony of unlawful wounding, which sounds really great, except the problem is, for Sam Samaritan, his father was a policeman, his grandfather was a policeman, all of the family have gone into the military, and he wanted to do the same. And that one conviction of unlawful wounding in a plea agreement will keep him from possessing a firearm till the age of 29. Therefore, he'll never be a policeman, and he will probably never be able to go into the military. And that is a huge collateral consequence for that one little conviction, which is a large conviction. So that gives you an example of how it can happen, where the family got what they wanted, they thought, but the long-term result was one they did not.
So even though all this is taking place in the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court, and we are talking about someone who is under the age of 18, who, as you pointed out earlier, traditionally has been held less responsible for their actions because of their youth and their immaturity, if the crime is serious enough, what happens could very well follow them into their adulthood and be known to employers, to housing authorities, and could very well affect their future lives.
Yes, it can. And it's a very serious issue that many organizations are dealing with right now. And in fact, I think at this point in time, the long-term effects are finally being understood. We've had enough time, about 14 years since the law originally changed, and we're seeing that people are being terribly affected, as you say.
And if people want to learn more or get involved, how would they do that?
Well, there are several groups in Virginia that are making terrific inroads and have been following it and collecting the data and becoming places where people are able to actually have forums. And they've been really putting together some of the experts in the area. One that would be is Just Children in Charlottesville. They've been compiling a lot of information and actually are having a bill before the Virginia General Assembly this year. Also, the Crime Commission is handling and has been looking into and done some studies recently, and it's all coming to a head actually this fall with the transfer issues and some of the other collateral issues. Those would be two areas that if you were interested to know more or let it be known, would be to contact both of those.
Well, thank you very much. We have been talking with Margaret Nelson. She is a former prosecutor, former public defender, and now a private defense attorney in Lynchburg, Virginia. Thank you for being on the show, Margaret.
Thank you so much, Marty. I appreciate the opportunity to bring these really important issues to the forefront.
This week's top three tips are about judgments. The first tip is that a judgment is a piece of paper at the local courthouse that says you owe someone a certain sum of money. A creditor who wants to force you to pay a debt must first ask the court for a judgment. The second tip is that if a court grants a judgment, the creditor can use legal action to collect the judgment. Two of these legal actions, garnishing income and garnishing a bank account, are quick, easy, and common. The other two of these legal actions, selling your personal property or house and land, are long, hard, and rare. The third tip is that you can't be arrested or go to jail for being unable to pay your bills, debts, or judgments. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips about judgments.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Predatory lenders in Virginia continue to operate with a business model that reaps obscene profits and hurts low-income people. Join us next week when Patrick Getline and LaTanya Reed from the Virginia Interfaith Center for Public Policy outline the problem of car title lending, present victim testimony on how car title loans are financial quicksand, and explain what to do about it in a rebroadcast of a show originally heard on October 22, 2008. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.